Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. South Sudan marks the International Day of Peace by hearing a message from the UN Secretary General. And a U.S. congressional panel hears from expert on Africa that more is needed than threats of arms embargo on South Sudan to stop the fighting.
Everything that we used to fight against Khartoum for the people of South Sudan, this government is now doing against its own people, and we are not sending clear signals and messages back to them. So of course they will resist, but we have to change their calculus. And we have to put something that's attractive and what the people of South Sudan, I think, ultimately want.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has once again called on South Sudan's leaders to end violence across the country. A top UN official in Juba read the Secretary General's message at an event marking the International Day of Peace. South Sudan's Vice President James Waniga agrees South Sudanese deserve peace. Tito Justin has this report for VOA from Juba.
Students from Juba Girls Secondary School sang a peace song at Nyokon Cultural Center, where residents, students, government officials, UN and civil society leaders gathered to commemorate the International Day of Peace under the theme, Together We Can Heal the Nation. It's the third time that South Sudanese are marking the Day of Peace while violence continues in parts of the country. The UN Secretary General's Deputy Special Representative in South Sudan, Mustafa Somare, read Ban's message calling on the warring parties to cease fire.
The United Nations calls on warring parties to lay down their arms and observe a 24-hour global ceasefire. The symbolism of a day without fighting is a crucial reminder that conflict can and must come to an end.
In his statement, Ban said the peace agreement signed by President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar more than a year ago provided a roadmap to end the country's conflict, but the two sides have continued to violate the agreement. The UN chief made a direct plea to South Sudan's leaders to restore peace.
Millions of people continue to suffer the impact of years of war. Hundreds and thousands are displaced from their home and many are still affected by violence. It is therefore crucial that this country's leaders renew their commitment to the implementation of the peace agreement.
Ban called on the leaders of the transitional government of national unity to put aside personal differences and work together.
Peace is about much more than putting weapons aside. It is about building a global society in which people live free from poverty and share the benefit of prosperity. It is about growing together and supporting each other.
Speaking at the same event, Vice President James Waniga agreed that the South Sudanese people have suffered for far too long and the conflict must come to an end. Speaking in Arabic, Wani says, everybody in the world wants peace.
I insan fi dunya dar salam. Lekin Africa.
Now in Africa, especially South Sudan, when peace comes like this, let us all stand for it. If you are at home, tell your husband or friend who wants to go and fight that, let him or her stop that.
Samore says the United Nations mission in South Sudan will continue to support efforts to restore peace across South Sudan and work toward achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
All of us can be sustainable development advocates and spread the word about the 2030 agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals. And as we can all hold our governments to account for keeping their pledges to the future. Let us all work together to help all human beings achieve dignity and equality, to build greener planets, and to make sure that no one is left behind.
The General Assembly has declared today as a day devoted to strengthening the ideals of peace, both within and among all nations and peoples. Some young residents of Juba expressed their thoughts about what this International Day of Peace means to them.
My name is Telia Zakaria. So many of majority have suffered, they have died without no reason. So because of that, we need peace so that we can have a good life, or we can have a development in our country, or we can have a good education in our country.
My name is Irene Lasu, and as a South Sudanese, I love peace very much. And comparing our context here, all I have to say to our leaders, to my fellow citizens, is that all I wish is to see that, I mean, the power of love of South Sudanese overcomes the love for power.
My name is Emmanuel Table. And my message to all the South Sudanese in these days, we need to live peacefully. Let's forget the past. We need to move on with peace and live like brothers and sisters. What has happened in the past, let's consider it gone. We need peace for our country to develop.
My name is Paul Abraham Granks. So I just want to tell the people that when you are doing something bad, accept that I am wrong and you will ask forgiveness and the peace will come. As we are looking for peace here in South Sudan.
I'm Makol Jacob Tuj. We experience a lot of problems, and peace is our responsibility, all of us, in order to stay in harmony, coexistence, and the rest of the thing will come, and we fulfill the need of humanity.
For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Still in Juba, as South Sudanese celebrate the International Day of Peace, an appointed member of parliament for Yei River County has joined the SPLA in opposition faction loyal to Riek Machar. Dabe Francis says he defected because of what he calls lack of implementation of the August peace agreement. Francis says President Kiir is not serious about implementing the peace accord. He says he defected to SPLA-IO in order to effect change in the transitional government of national unity.
The failure of the government to accept the implementation of the peace agreement. When the peace agreement was signed on 17th of August last year, the president took almost 9 days for him to assign his signature in Juba, after when he had consulted with his joint council of elders. The intention was very clear, so that our aspiration as Equatorians, which was actually put in the peace agreement, so that the containment areas are well specified and defined, so that the Equatorians, once in a while, become part and parcel in the question of the national security organ the government of the Republic of South Sudan decided to deny us. The second thing,
when you say your demand, who are you representing? I mean, you told me you represent Kajukeji. Now you're talking about Equatoria. What do you mean?
Yes, I represent a constituency in Kajukeji County, which falls within the region of the former region of Equatoria. And therefore, I therefore feel that any aspiration of the whole of Equatoria that was well stipulated in the peace agreement covers my interest, and therefore covers the people of Kajukeji County as well. That's why I'm referring to Equatoria. We feel the president is not really for peace. And for sure, he's not for peace. That's why the media authority decided to censor the media houses in Juba. And therefore, the freedom of expression of views and opinion is no longer viable in the country. So as a member of parliament, what is my role? I'm supposed to legislate laws. I'm supposed to condemn whatever the government is doing against my people. If this place is already being removed, what then am I doing in the parliament?
Someone will also argue that being a member of parliament, you have all the powers to impeach the president and to raise a motion in the parliament and say the president has failed to implement the agreement and you impeach him as a member of parliament. Why would you opt to go and join an opposition and fight?
The level of dictatorship that the president has in this government cannot allow an impeachment to happen. So the only thing is join the opposition so that we cause a regime change, which currently, by the way, is the popular demand of the people of the Republic of South Sudan.
Honorable Francis, you are aware that the population of South Sudan, are suffering at this moment as we speak. There are thousands of people who are on the move, going to seek refuge in the neighboring countries. And you are talking about fighting. That means you're going to inflict more suffering on your people.
Well, in the first place, our people have decided to leave the country for refuge because of the tribal militias that the President of the Republic of South Sudan has decided to recruit. These tribal militias have not come, actually, to protect the civilians. You know, and that's why our people have left for refuge and also in the RDP camp. Now, why I've opted to come and fight is because I want to fight for the protection of my citizens. Because now even a member of parliament cannot be allowed to speak. When you speak, you are committing suicide. See the point? And all our people are always being killed, robbed, looted, harassed, detained. All these acts cannot be spoken. You cannot condemn about them. The only option is that you take arms against the government so that you protect your civilians and you insert a new regime that will be there to protect the civilians of the country. And that's why today, in the history of my life, I've decided to join Dr. Ramachar so that we can come together and form a new government that people call their own, so that people of the government can come back again to form new life, so that they can be peaceful and prosperous.
And how
the
are
way
you,
it is in the region.
How are you going to do it in a peaceful way when you are talking about fighting?
Actually, the only option that we thought would be viable is the implementation of the peace agreement, which the president does not like. Because the content of the peace agreement talks about reforms of the national security institution, reform of the public service, reform of the economic sector, which is too much for the president to implement. And that's why he does not want. So in a scenario where the president does not want reform, actually he continues looting, he continues killing innocent civilians, what do we need? The only thing is not to kick him away and put him in the dustbin of history.
That's Dabe Francis, an appointed member of parliament representing Kajokeji in Yei River State. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. Some tough questions were asked by lawmakers at a Senate Foreign Relations hearing on South Sudan yesterday. Senate lawmakers asked experts on Africa if an arms embargo or imposing a trusteeship on South Sudan could pull the country out of its humanitarian crisis and convince its leaders to work on behalf of the people rather than focusing on holding on to power. Kate Kenoff, director for the Africa Center for Strategic Studies at the U.S. Department of Defense, worked with what was then Southern Sudan during the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which paved way for South Sudan's independence from Sudan. Kenneth believes a tougher approach is needed in South Sudan, saying threats of arms embargo has fallen on deaf ears.
Everything that we used to fight against Khartoum for the people of South Sudan, this government is now doing against its own people, and we are not sending clear signals and messages back to them. So of course they will resist, but we have to change their calculus. And we have to put something that's attractive and what the people of South Sudan, I think, ultimately want. They want the space to resume their lives.
Kenneth says bringing stability to South Sudan will take more than sanctioning six individuals, which the UN has done so far, along with the proposal of a regional protection force, which the UN Security Council is trying to finalize before the end of the month. In July, an opinion article co-authored by Kenneth and Ambassador Princeton Lyman, the former U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, advocated for the UN and the African Union to consider establishing an executive mandate to administer the country until institutions are built to support politics in a non-violent manner. Kenneth told lawmakers yesterday that this external administration, which could turn the country around in 10 to 15 years, could be the best way to realistically assist the people of South Sudan. She also said the government has, quote, crossed a lot of red lines, end quote, including the looting of the WFP facility in July and the killing of a local journalist that same month. She said the U.S. should not continue to tolerate that behavior. The committee's ranking Democratic member, Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland, agrees.
So the current leadership needs to be held accountable because it's impossible for me to believe this type of conduct is taking place without the president or vice president fully complicitous in these operations. So culpability needs to be accounted for, and we need to move forward.
One popular opinion among the lawmakers is for moving forward the implementation of arms embargo, which Kenneth says is not only possible but could potentially save thousands of lives by curbing major conflict.
There are not that many points of entry in South Sudan where you can bring in truly heavy equipment and munitions. Yes, small arms, light weapons can move across borders, very porous, that we won't have a good chance at monitoring and probably stopping very much of. But this other kind of procurement that's going on, there aren't that many airstrips that can handle that level of equipment. The roads don't exist outside the one that the United States helped to build, for the most part, from Uganda into Juba. And so it's not as complicated as it might seem in other places, and it has been done effectively in Cote d'Ivoire, other circumstances.
The African Union is yet to establish a hybrid court, as stipulated in the 2015 peace agreement, which would be created to administer justice to the victims of the conflict, but also hold politicians and military leaders accountable. Jock Madu Jock, co-founder and executive director of the Juba-based Saad Institute, told lawmakers that the creation of a hybrid court should be prioritized because it could prevent government and opposition soldiers from carrying out further attacks on civilians.
There is no question that horrible things have been done and that somebody has to account for them. And the only judgment we can make can only be based on the investigation, to assign blame, because right now blame can be assigned generally to SPLA or to opposition armies, but those are not human persons to be held accountable. We have to pin some of these things on individuals, and that can only be done through this investigation.
Luca Byong, a global fellow at the Peace Research Institute in Oslo, says the UN and the African Union, as well as IGAD, should focus on implementing the peace agreement. Byong insisted that the peace deal, now more than a year ago, is not dead and is the best option for putting the country back on track. As lawmakers consider other options, Byong says they should not lose sight of the agreement as a tool for uniting the parties and administering justice to the victims of the conflict.
On the other hand, the prospect that the international community might at a certain point have to intervene should encourage the parties to the agreement to implement it, because that threat is very important. But equally important, I think, even with political will, we need robust technical and financial support to sustain and to make this peace attractive and have the dividends of peace.
A statement released earlier this week by the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations said the United States must come to terms with the fact that South Sudan is no longer a reliable partner. In July, government soldiers ambushed American embassy vehicles and targeted Americans at the Tarain compound after fighting erupted between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those who backed the former first Vice President Riek Machar. The statement said if the U.S. government remain its relations with South Sudan, it would help the U.S. to take decisive action on issues like arms embargo. That report was prepared by Ian Buer in Washington. In July, there was an attack on a diplomatic convoy by Presidential Guard units in Juba and has raised eyebrows and prompted more questions from lawmakers. It is still not clear whether or not the Presidential Guards were instructed to fire on the two U.S. diplomatic vehicles. No one has been arrested or charged. In part two of our look at what happened in July 7, we hear how the U.S. ambassador to UN responded and how U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Molly Fee, responded, according to Foreign Policy magazine writer Colm Lynch, who wrote an in-depth article about the incident this month. Carol Van Damme reports from Washington.
The State Department's more muted response to an incident in which Americans were targeted by armed men in uniform who appeared to be President Kiir's forces occurred at a time when the U.S. was trying to get the South Sudan government's agreement for the deployment of 4,000 additional U.N. peacekeepers to restore the peace in the South Sudanese capital and other areas of the country where fighting has erupted. Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, who recently led a U.N. Security Council visit to Juba to underscore the July attacks against U.S. peacekeepers and civilians, never mentioned the ambush in her public comments. But Power did raise the incident and other threats against U.S. citizens in a one-on-one meeting with President Kiir, according to her spokesman, Curtis Cooper. The attack on the convoy also happened at a time when there's been increasing anti-American and anti-UN sentiment in South Sudan. At the time of the ambush, those sentiments were running high. It's still not clear, however, what prompted the American diplomats to leave when they did that day in July. Lynch says he's heard differing accounts.
The account I was told by the senior State Department official is that Ambassador Fee was concerned about the deteriorating security situation and that she called or texted or reached out to the diplomats who were at a hotel, at a restaurant in Juba and said, you guys need to get back home right now. I've since been told that that's not accurate, that the group decided on their own that there was a 10 p.m. curfew and that they were getting reports that things were going south.
The Americans' two SUVs were passing by the palace when at least six presidential guards holding AK-47 assault rifles stationed at a nearby checkpoint pulled them over to the side of the road and yelled at them in a mix of Arabic and Dinka, according to Lynch. He says at one point the soldiers tried to force one of the car doors open, which prompted the South Sudanese driver to hit the gas pedal and zoom off. That's when the guards opened fire. Ambassador Fee called top South Sudanese security officials, asking, quote, what the hell was going on and to stop it, according to a top unnamed State Department official who spoke to Lynch. And the next morning, Fee snapped a photo of the bullet-ridden SUV Donegan was traveling in, took it to President Kiir, and warned that the attack was a clear indication that he had, quote, lost control, end quote. While it has never been proven that the president ordered the attack, Mr. Kiir and his top advisors have been seen as nurturing the anti-American and anti-UN sentiment through a propaganda campaign that makes it appear as though Washington and the United Nations favor Machar. John Prendergast, founder of the Enough Project, which supports human rights in Africa, says anti-U.S. sentiment appears to be coming from the Minister of Information, Michael McQuay. Prendergast told Lynch, in an environment of vilification of the U.S. and the U.N., coupled with total impunity for the actions of soldiers, incidents, and escalation were inevitable. For VOA News, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at why many traffic lights in Juba are not working. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
When you were a child, what did you hope to be when you grew up?
When I was young, at the age of 10 years, I always told myself that I wanted to be a lawyer. When I grew up, I wanted to be a lawyer. But then, anyway, somehow that dream changed. Now I'm a procurement officer here. Yeah, seriously.
When I was a child, I hoped to become a doctor, and it's unfortunate that I'm leading a very different direction. I'm no longer a doctor. I'm trying my ways. Maybe I can get into politics. Yeah.
My dream was to be somebody who can create change in the society. I can't tell which profession, but somebody who can change this in the society.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. City Council officials in Juba say thieves stole the solar panels which powered half of the street and traffic lights in Juba. Residents blame the government for doing nothing to safeguard public utilities. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Juba.
In 2014, the City Council in Juba installed more than 60 solar-powered traffic lights donated by the Chinese government at 50 road intersections across Juba. 4 years earlier, streetlights were installed along the town's main roads. Today, a few street and traffic lights still work. Officials say some street lights could work but have never been repaired. They say more lights were vandalized in July when fighting flared up between the South Sudan Army and Riek Machar forces. The deputy mayor for administration, Ater Ayel Wolgol, blames people who he says are not nationalists for stealing the solar panels.
We reported this to our organized forces, and they have not able to arrest anyone. So that one we can say that it is responsibility of the organized forces who are patrolling the town during the night.
Wolgol also accused some careless motorists of knocking down street lights. He says most drivers who knock down a street light are members of the armed forces. 37-year-old Juba resident Michael Diang Root says he has noted that many solar panels powered light along the Juba Custom Road and the Juba Gudele Road have been removed. Root says the lack of traffic and street light make it dangerous for pedestrians and motorists to move at night.
Because pedestrians that can cross the road, it is very difficult for them because vehicle have no direction. When it is a road junction, the situation is very confusing for both the drivers and also the pedestrian.
Road is calling on the government to think about the welfare of the community and install security light and traffic light along Juba roads. Another Juba resident, Dennis Achai, says the Security Council should instruct authorities to immediately repair or replace broken street and traffic light in the capital.
If street lights are not there, it is very difficult to move at night because you feel insecure sometimes, and also it is true because if someone is hiding in those darkness, you cannot identify from very far unless you come too close to the person. And also the traffic lights are very, very important because it is the one controlling the movement of vehicles, motorcycles, and even those who are footing.
Bob Roth and Achai says they believe the lack of street light have led to an increase in criminal activities in Juba. Deputy Mayor Ayel says city council authorities plan to repair the broken light but did not specify when work will begin.
We form a technical team so that they can weld, so that they cannot be able to remove. The technical committee, they are still working on it, will come out with the budget. The one functioning now, I think, will not be more than 40%. Most of them are damaged. And we are going to put them in our priorities because it is very important to guide our citizens during the movement in the town.
The deputy mayor estimates it will cost the city council more than $100,000 to repair broken street and traffic lights. He says he expects China to provide additional funds to light up Juba streets. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Born Free by Afori Mposa.
I'm a mule.
We've been listening to Ghanaian musician Afori Mposa with the song Bofre. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ko ko nunu, but this one also seems to me like ko ko nunu.